Good morning, Tucson, Arizona. This is Grant Kruger, and welcome to Jump in Tucson, the newest show on 1030 AM The Voice, your home for local talk and news. Today, we're going to segue into our third show on Jump in Tucson. You had the pleasure last Monday of both meeting Dr. Ed Ackerley, and then on Tuesday, we had the wonderful Ted Maxwell from SALC and Jaime Chamberlain to talk about all the growth in southern Arizona and the effects of border and border trade. Today, we're going to talk about something equally as important to southern Arizona, and that's the hospitality industry. Perhaps you don't realize exactly how important the hospitality industry is to Tucson. But on a national level, for 2023, sales were forecasted to be $997 billion in 1 year, nearly $1 trillion. In southern Arizona alone, there are approximately 1,200 restaurants. And according to the National Restaurant Association, the average restaurant employs approximately 50 people. So taking 1,200 restaurants and turning that into, say, on average 50 employees, we're talking upwards of 60,000 jobs in southern Arizona in the hospitality industry. That's an amazing amount of employment. As we know, employment has been very, very important for us here in Tucson, and it makes big news all the time when a new company comes and brings in 50, 100, 200 jobs. We've been talking about the $600 jobs that Caterpillar has created for, gosh, the better portion of this last decade. And it's been big news, the American Battery Factory, and all of these jobs that are supposedly coming from that. But here we've got 60,000 jobs in the service industry between restaurants and hotels, and it's something that hasn't been talked about all that terribly much. I noticed that one of the top stories on the Arizona Daily Star the other day was still lingering from January 3rd as a top three article, and that was the top 23 restaurants that had closed in 2023. I know Christy, Simone, and Matt had joked about opening up El Baraco over here at some point, And all jokes aside, we're filled with the macabre of restaurants that are closing, lists of things that are opening and closing, but there's never a list of people doing it right. How about the list of businesses that are growing and adding to their employees, right? Employing, in many cases, hundreds of people and absolutely killing it in the hospitality industry. And today, I'd like to present a guest to you that I believe is absolutely killing it in not only just southern Arizona, but has had the opportunity to expand into the Phoenix market as well, and that is Mr. Nate Aries, owner of Prep and Pastry, August Rhodes Bakery, Flora's Market Run, and Commodore and Company. Good morning, Nate.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks for coming out today.
Well, I appreciate
excited.
It.
We're excited to have you here.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
So to start off with, why don't you give us a little rundown about the genesis of Nate Aries, right? Like, how did you start in this business? As the National Restaurant Association would say that 8 out of 10 restaurant owners started their industry careers in entry-level positions. And as someone that started off as a dishwasher myself, how can you tell us about your growth and where you started from?
Yeah, started off as a dishwasher under the famous Sam Fox restaurant group many moons ago. And, it was the first time going and being at a restaurant thinking that it didn't have to be an Applebee's or a Red Lobster to be fancy. It blew my mind and I fell in love with it right away.
I love it. That's a great story. As a former dishwasher as well, too, I can tell you what it feels like to wear a garbage bag as a plastic smock and have your feet wet and scrub cheese off of cast iron plates. But there is no better training than a trial by fire in the restaurant industry. And so where'd you go from being a dishwasher?
You know, I just moved up to being a busser and then to a bar back, then to a bartender, and then just being a lead. And then I moved on out to Vegas to kind of pursue larger concepts, and was lucky enough to get a manager job at Sushi Samba, which is a national huge brand. That one location there in Vegas did around 25, 30 million a year. It was insane.
Wow, that's a huge restaurant concept.
It is.
What are the average sales of a restaurant that you own right now, without getting into specifics of one? Like, what's the average gross volume that you're doing in sales?
You know, if you're looking at a smaller unit, we're trying to shoot for about 2 million.
Okay.
Larger units, say like if someone owned a bar slash, you know, 10,000 square foot spot, you can probably push in Tucson, you know, anywhere from 4 to 6 million.
Right, that's a lot of money, Nate, and that's a lot of sales tax, and a lot of that money goes back into the economy as well, too, because as we know, the restaurant business isn't an incredibly high gross margin business. We've got a lot of high sales, but we give a lot of that back both to employment and to suppliers as well, too.
Yeah, if you actually look at the mom-pop spots, I mean, they'll be lucky to be netting, you know, this is not an actual fact, you know, but they'll be lucky to net 4%. You know, people that are running systems and really organized with inventory controls and cost management and, you know, projection layouts, they can touch, you know, 10 to 12%. But really the days of, you know, netting 15 to 20% are long gone for sure.
Right. And so basically 90 some odd percent of the money that comes into a restaurant gets spent back out into the community in some capacity. And I can't overstate what that impact has on our local community. Imagine these 1,200 restaurants all doing numbers like that, and 90 some odd percent of their gross is going right back into the economy.
100%. That's why you should keep supporting those local bomb pop spots.
100%. Amen, brother. So tell me a little bit more about your experience. You were a manager at a high grossing, you know, $30 million a year sushi place.
Yeah.
And where'd you go from there? How'd you end up becoming the king of prep and pastry and caffeine here in Tucson, Arizona?
You know, I just, after doing some consulting gigs around town and I just said, you know, it's time for me to do my own thing. And one of the consulting jobs I was on, I just kind of cut a deal, said, hey, if I can get you out of your tax debt or, you know, whatever it is, can I take over this location? We did a handshake deal and the rest is history. I moved into prep and pastry as my home because I couldn't afford my rent anymore at the apartment. My car got repoed and, you know, and I just kind of grinded it out for the first year and a half.
Wild. What a story. Now, your first prep and pastry was actually on Campbell Avenue here in Tucson, but on the other side of Campbell, it was a smaller establishment, right?
Yeah, only about 1,800 square feet, super tiny. No street visibility. It was, you know, but I knew the spot was special. I knew that it should be a high-end brunch spot. And just, you know, we got lucky with the timing with, you know, no one doing that in Tucson. It's always good, as you know, it's always good to be first in Tucson to do something. It catches on really fast. We were lucky enough to do the non-mom-pop feel of a brunch spot.
No, it was a beautiful restaurant, and I remember lines out the door for that one as well, too.
Yeah.
It was good luck getting a table at prep on Saturday and Sunday right from the start, and I salute you for that, because not every restaurant starts off with as glorious of a quick start as you got out of the hole, like a Usain Bolt over here, as opposed to a slow start like so many others.
You know, yeah, it has its pluses and its minuses, you know. Definitely the pluses have outweighed the minuses, but yeah, it's been a fun run.
Oh, really excited. And from that prep and pastry, where did you go at that point to grow?
You know, I was a small investor into the Abbey, so Comner came about. I took over the what is now the Comner, and started opening a couple of other preps after that, and really kind of came out the gates running.
Amazing. Well, when we come back, we're going to follow up on your story over here. You're listening to Jump in Tucson with your host, Grant Kruger, and Nate Aries from Prep and Pastry on 1030 AM, The Voice. Good morning, Tucson. You're back with Grant Kruger and Nate Aries, owner of Prep and Pastry on Jump in Tucson and 1030 AM, The Voice. We are excited to be here as Jump in Tucson again. We've got an amazing lineup coming for you guys this week. Tomorrow's show is going to be hosted by Tom Moulton from the Southern Arizona Attractions Alliance, and he's going to bring in guests Tiana Holder and Kim Franklin from the Arizona Sonoran Desert Museum, and we're going to talk about the importance of the Desert Museum to Southern Arizona and what that means to all of you listeners. But getting back to the importance of the hospitality industry, my guest here is Nate Aries from Prep and Pastry. Welcome back, Nate.
Thank you so much.
So when we left off, we were talking about your experiences in moving into what was the Abbey at Kolb and Sunrise. And at that time, it was a different brand. It's now called Commoner & Company. How did it become Commoner & Company?
You know, just I was a very, very, very small investor into the Abbey. when they went bankrupt, you know, the landlords asked all the investors to take it over. Everyone said no. I was the last on the list, and I said yes, and the rest is history.
Wild.
Yeah.
That's a great location over there. Beautiful spot, right? The southeast corner of Kolb and Sunrise, Commoner and Company. Very well executed restaurant as well, too.
Thank you.
For those that don't know, I happen to be a restaurateur as well. I'm the owner of Union Public House, Reforma, Modern Mexican, Proof Artisanal Pizza and Pasta, and The Maverick. And so to bring on other restaurateurs, I think is a big deal for us to talk about how great other restaurateurs are doing. There's something to be said about saying you're all competitors and we're not going to play nicely in the same sandbox. And I think that that's far from the truth. To be honest with you, I think there's a lot of great players in the industry, a lot of great family people that care about Southern Arizona and about Tucson's economic development and are doing great things here. And Nate, you are certainly one of them.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, I always say, you know, if you can't make it in a million person city, you know, well, million greater Tucson, million people around you, especially during the winter, you know, it's not the competition. It's something within your walls, and because there's plenty of room for everyone to succeed here in the restaurant world.
Without a doubt. And I think there are space for new players. And you've certainly proved that by moving from an 1,800 square foot prep and pastry on the west side of Campbell Avenue into the old Yoshimatsu space, yeah. It was, right? And how many square feet is that building?
It's 4,000.
Okay, so twice the size.
Yeah, which is the perfect size for a prep and pastry. You know, our east side location is only about 2,200 square feet. And we're packed in there tight. You know, we've learned, as you know, a certain size hood for a certain size amount of seats. You know, it's a formula. And the 4,000 square feet is perfect for us.
Amazing. And that's going to be the size, you think, for your model moving forward?
100%. Yeah, we will fluctuate anywhere from 4,000 to 4,500 square feet.
So tell me about moving across the street over there, because opening a new restaurant or moving a restaurant can be some of the worst days of your entire life, right? We are talking about not enough hours in the day, more stress than you could possibly imagine. Cash is just going out and out and out, and nothing is coming in. I'm not sure that most people out there understand that sort of pressure that's really upon a restaurateur in the days and weeks leading up to their opening. Why don't you tell us about that?
Yeah, it's, you know, you have to, it's long days, you know. The money going out and nothing coming in is overly stressful. I mean, opening a restaurant is, a lot of people hear the high sales and calculate that to, you know, high profit margins.
Understood.
Which is really not the world that it used to be which we'll talk about later. But when servers were getting paid $2 an hour, when you and I were, you know, busing, it was, I don't know, a buck something plus tips, you know, that those days are gone. So having all that cash flow go out, and then over at Prep and Pastry, we didn't want to lose any of our team members on the move. So we kept them on payroll just to make sure that our, you know, when we moved to a newer location that didn't look as kitschy as the old location, that we still had the same atmosphere and excitement with the team members moving over there. So it's very stressful.
It's a beautifully designed restaurant. I think it's got a great feel. Some might call it Pinteresty cute. Who does your interior design? Like, where does that come up with that inspiration?
I love interior design. I love live plants. I love bright white, simple. You know, some accents of Spanish tiles. But you know, nowadays people have better eyes than I do. There's a lot of people that have better eyes than I do. So I work a lot with House of Form out of Scottsdale. They're the new big hitters in Arizona. When we first met them, they weren't. They've blown up and it's been fun to watch. But so they've really tackled our brand book, and they've done our most recent designs.
Excellent, excellent. So speaking of Scottsdale there, you've got two new stores in the last few years that you opened up in both Scottsdale and Gilbert. So at this point, like, you're not just a Tucson operator anymore. You are an Arizona regional player with six stores. Tell me about the challenges of opening up in Phoenix compared to Tucson.
You know, everyone says, you know, there's so much more competition in Phoenix, you know, so, you know, why go north? It's in my eyes, you know, Tucson treats you and I very well. Phoenix has almost been easier in the sense of you've got so many more people wanting to try new items. So as long as you can, you know, make sure that the brand is consistent and the team in Phoenix and Gilbert, you know, Scottsdale Gilbert's drinking the same juice as the team down here of the excitement of what we're doing and hospitality driven. It's actually been easier, in my opinion, to open up there than opposed down in Tucson. Now, again, because you have so many more people to market to.
Do you think that it's different from a regulatory standpoint that perhaps in Maricopa County, either the health departments or the municipal governments are easier or more business friendly than in Tucson?
You know, I love my health department here, as they know. I like to work with them, but there's different ways up there that they approach items, which made the process much easier to get open. In Gilbert, I've never seen, like, the way they do things is crazy. They give you this like special board that you can call, and if you have an issue, they walk you right through it. It was
wild.
It was wild.
I wouldn't know anything about that. In Virginia, I haven't had that opportunity to get there yet, but no. But perhaps one day we'll get some growth up in the 602 over there as well too. But congratulations on those stores as well.
Thanks.
Too. It's amazing to see the growth of the prep and pastry brand turn into an Arizona powerhouse in some great, great locations. And that sort of growth is something we'd like to see here in Tucson a little more. Do you have plans to do any other Tucson stores right now?
No, you know, I'm mainly just trying to focus on these past couple of years of getting back into the shops, getting the team reorganized with setting our 2024 goal of, of just really organizing us again, getting back to doing what we used to do before the pandemic and the cost of rising. You're relearning what it means to be a sit down restaurant. I am going to be partners in a building with Rio Nuevo. But that's down the road. Right now is strictly focusing on our current shops.
It's quite a challenge to be a multi-unit operator, right? According to the National Restaurant Association, 7 out of 10 operations are single-unit operators, which only leads 30% into multi-unit, and it's a different skill set. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
You know, it's just really making sure you have the right team members in the right places. And I've lost a lot of money from not having right team members in the right places. You know, good to great is a great book to read. You know, someone could be great at something, but they're only good because you have them in the wrong spots. And, you know, that book really opened my eyes of organizing a team and making sure that meetings are useful and are actually, you know, productive, and making sure that your time is so valuable that you got to make sure that every minute counts.
Well, I think you guys are doing great. Good to great sounds like a misnomer for prep and pastry. It looks like it's gone from great to great for you over here. And I salute you for your success thus far. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about the challenges of the industry as a whole, macroeconomically. We're going to discuss some of the changes in state law in Arizona, some of the municipal laws, and how that makes it difficult on operators moving forward. A lot of people ask, why aren't there more full-service sit-down restaurants in my town? I've had the Saurita Chamber of Commerce and the Marana Chamber of Commerce literally come out with restaurant recruitment task force trying to get full service restaurants. And I'd like to ask you a few questions about why that's not happening here in Tucson or in Southern Arizona, and some things that we could do about that when we come back. You are listening to Jump in Tucson. This is Grant Kruger and Nate Aries from Prep and Pastry on 1030 AM The Voice. Good morning again, Tucson, Arizona. You're with Grant Kruger on Jump in Tucson with my guest, Nate Aries, owner of Prep and Pastry, Flores Market Run, Commoner and Company, and August Rhodes Bakery. And we are talking the importance of the restaurant industry in Southern Arizona and Arizona as a whole. Welcome back, Nate.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
So when we left off, we were discussing these restaurant recruitment task force, that there are literally municipalities out there knocking on operators' doors, like yourself, on my door and on other operators, saying, please come into our town. We really don't want another Dutch Brothers. We really don't want another Jack in the Box. How can we get something that's not a salad and go? And so, like, what are the challenges for this? Like, why aren't we seeing more full service restaurants being developed in Southern Arizona?
You know, it's actually a great question and a pretty short answer. The short answer is the consumer is getting lazier, in the sense that if they do go out and sit down, they want entertainment values to come with their dinner, unless it's a high-end steakhouse or, you know, like a Scottsdale, you know, steakhouse, Maple and Ash or something like that. You know, the normal mom pop sit down, it's what are you offering different than what, you know, Applebee's and all them are offering? It's really not much. And then, you know, cost of goods going through the roof these past couple of years, so much that you couldn't even raise prices to really combat that. And you know, labor cost. You can have a drive-through for a, you know, half the amount of labor and do the same exact amount of sales. And that's why you see a lot of places, you know, using iPads nowadays. It makes table turns faster. You're not wasting, you know, two to 3 minutes walking back and forth from computers. You know, you're eliminating the amount of time that someone's sitting inside, which back in the day you never wanted to do that, but now you got to do a certain amount of covers or you're kind of, you know, lack of better words, dead in the water.
So talking about drive-thrus over here, in preparation for the show, I was doing some research on drive-thrus and fast food restaurants. And this might blow your mind, Nate, but it turns out that Tucson, Arizona, in a 2021 study, has the 10th highest rate of fast food restaurants per capita in the United States. So that is number 10 in fast food restaurants per capita. We had spent a lot of time over the years of marketing the best 23 miles of Mexican food. And quite frankly, we might be the best 23 miles of drive-thrus.
yeah, that's it's pretty crazy. I've seen that study before. I've seen that article a long time ago. I remember reading it wherever it was. Stop going to those spots and go to Rolly's. You know, go to Rolly's, go to Ren Coffee House. You know, go to those spots.
I love it. Support local is something that we should all do. But locally or chains or drive-thrus, we're all subject to substantial minimum wage increases in the state of Arizona. As the listeners may or may not know, minimum wage went up on January 1st of this calendar year. It's now $14.35 in the state of Arizona and $11.35 for servers. And so I want to unpack this with you for a brief moment over here, that $11.35 for servers sounds like a low wage, but at $14.35 an hour, it gives us the 8th highest minimum wage in the United States. And at $11.35 an hour, it's the 4th highest server minimum wage in the United States. So we've got a California level minimum wage, but a Tucson, Arizona level economy. And what does that do to the full service restaurant world, Nate?
It makes it not as special. You got to make more covers. You got to turn the tables faster. For say like restaurant groups like you and I, we didn't have to give a single person a raise, other than the servers, of course, because we're paying above minimum wage. But when you've got those mom and pop spots that aren't doing the covers that we can do because we've got the marketing budgets to put behind, you know, getting people through the doors, it really hurts their bottom line. You know, restaurants are, if you factor in cost of goods and labor, I mean, they're trying to shoot for 65, but you add a couple of points on that labor, which most of them do, they're running about 70% total cost of sales.
That's prime cost. So that includes your cost of goods sold and your labor for the listeners out there. And that's kind of the number one metric that we manage in restaurants, because those are our controllable costs. Now, getting back to this $11.35 per servers, how many servers out there make only $11.35 an hour in your world.
No, yeah, that's none. I mean, well, you know,
so
most of them do not. I mean, they're hoping to, you know, in my locations, we're trying to get them above $20 an hour.
So I know you'll be shocked by this, but I have some statistics here that wait staff in full service restaurants, according to the National Restaurant Association, earn a median of $27 an hour. The upper quartile is $41.50 an hour with tips, of course. And I can assure you that in our own establishments, as someone that processes payroll, my average front of house staff earns between $40 and $50 an hour working. And yet, when these minimum wage increases happen, they hit our highest compensated members of the staff with the largest portion of minimum wage.
Yeah, it is. It seems. I know some states have raised minimum wage, which is great. We're not saying that that's not great. We've been paying, I believe you and I, at least, you know, with my company, I know we've been paying people above $15 an hour before it was cool to say it, but it would be nice if we could throw more money at the back of the house or, you know, non-tip team members, because, you know, raise that back there, because the front of the house really, they're not living off of the minimum wage. They're living off of the tips coming through the door, which are great. And when I said, you know, $20 an hour earlier, now, mind you, that's $20 an hour prior to the minimum wage. So they're averaging really high.
Understood. It's actually a really well compensated position. And I think it's misunderstood as such by the general public. But I can assure you, as somebody that employs a number of great students, right, that are both students at Pima Community College here in Tucson and the University of Arizona, that for many, if not most of them, it's actually a substantial pay cut when they leave the service industry to go to their quote unquote real jobs.
That's why they don't leave, most of them, you know. We're always excited to see team members grow and go do something, you know, what they've been trying to do forever, but it definitely a lot of them stay once they see the pay cuts.
I love the idea that team members grow and even go off to open their own restaurants, right? I remember meeting you as, you know, a team member of a restaurant over a decade ago, and I'm incredibly proud to see your growth. I've had amazing team members of ours at Union Hospitality Group grow and open their own restaurants. Shout out to Patrick and Ayana from Tandem American Eatery on Tanga Verde. Just opened up. You guys should go visit that one over there. They are grade A operators and great people as well, too. I think it's an amazing story to see people start from the bottom and work their way up. And it's really amazing to see your growth over here as well, too. And I find it very difficult to see how this minimum wage is actually hurting the growth of the service industry and turning us into a generation of businesses where you've got a front-facing iPad. And that your order is, they flip that iPad for you and ask you for a tip before you even had your service, right? Like, this is something that I think is counterintuitive to hospitality.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, you will see more and more restaurants stray away from sit down. They will go fast casual. They will go drive through. And if they don't do that, they'll try to get a bar driven because liquor, you know, beverage purchases are higher margin than food purchases. Prices are already, I think, in my opinion, I think prices are kind of tapped out on raising prices on menus to make up for, you know, the cost of goods and labor. So they're going to have to get creative different ways.
Right. And you see some of that creativity in, unfortunately, labor reduction, yeah. Right? There's a certain element of full service out there, listeners, that just require X number of servers per tables. There's a ratio that no matter what you do, that's if you keep adding tables to that server, proper service, proper hospitality isn't going to be achieved. They're going to turn into order takers rather than salespeople guiding you through an amazing, hospitable experience, right? To take you through the wine list, to take you through the dessert list. We all loved career servers like that. And although we've got a salary that is commensurate with career servers, we don't have the restaurant economy anymore to support that front of house, the size of the front of house staff that we used to. And I think that leads to a lot of erosion, a lot of QSR and quick service concepts. And unfortunately, I think the consumer is going to see more and more and more of these and be ultimately disappointed.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you just see some of the bigger brands coming out swinging with the quick service restaurants. It's just, it makes sense. It's just, it's good business, you know. You can't hit your 10% net in a sit down, then we'll find a way.
Color me lazy, but I enjoy having a server walk me through the experience. I enjoy not getting up off of my rear end to get another glass of wine or order that dessert. Yeah. And I enjoy a knowledgeable salesperson. And I think that that's something that we're starting to lose in the industry. And when we come back, I want to finish up our segments to talk about the challenges moving forward. What kind of restaurants you may build moving forward, what we're going to see in the industry. You're listening to Jump in Tucson with Grant Kruger from Union Hospitality Group and Nate Arias from Prep and Pastry on 10:30 a.m., The Voice in Tucson. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. This is Grant Kruger, and with me, guest Nate Arias, owner of Prep and Pastry. This is Jump in Tucson, a new show here on 10:30 a.m., The Voice. To remind you guys of the amazing lineup we've got coming later this week, on Thursday, we've got Tom Moulton from the Southern Arizona Attraction Alliance. His guest is going to be Tiana Holder and Kim Franklin from the Arizona Sonora Desert Museum, a very important attraction here in Tucson. I think this is going to be a fascinating show and a lot of amazing things to learn about the Desert Museum. I know my kids love it. I love to send my family here when they come visit from Detroit, Michigan. They can get stuck by a prickly pear cactus and whatnot. Love the Desert Museum. That's going to be a fantastic show. And on Friday, we've got Dr. Ed Ackerley from Ackerley Advertising hosting a group from Coaches for Charity. That's Janet Hare, Brian Wilson, they're going to be talking about the MLK Basketball Classic at the McHale Center on Monday, January 5th. And they're going to have Dr. Julian Ackerley from the Tucson, Arizona Boys Chorus, an amazing group that we sponsor as well at Union Hospitality Group. Love the Boys Chorus. That's going to be on Friday. But getting back into what we were discussing with Nate Arias, owner of Prep and Pastry, we were talking about the challenges moving forward in the restaurant business. To not overstate the importance of this, again, there are over 1,200 restaurants in Southern Arizona employing upwards of 50,000 people in the hospitality industry. There's only 121 hotels, according to Visit Tucson. We've got 10 times as many restaurants. And yet it seems to sit on the back burner in terms of importance, in terms of care from governmental agencies. And we're here to dispel some of those myths today. According to the National Restaurant Association, 63% of adults have worked in the restaurant industry at some point. Maybe, Nate, that number should be a little higher.
I think everyone should. You know, you want to see, it's a good lesson in how to treat people. It really is.
There's no question that customer service is a dying skill set, right? And it's something that we're losing in future generations as we communicate with each other through iPads and screens and text and abbreviated conversation. There's nothing like greeting a guest face-to-face with a warm, hospitable welcome and welcoming into your restaurant, which is essentially your home, and serving him an amazing, beautiful meal. There also is a tremendous amount of minority employment in restaurants as well, too, right? 41% of all restaurant firms are owned by minorities, and that's nationally. It's probably substantially higher here in Tucson, and that's compared to 30% of businesses overall in the private sector. So this is something that also shows why restaurants have substantially more minority managers than any other industry as well, too. So we've got a caller on the line, Daniel, who's got a question on tipping. If you'd like to jump on in over here, to jump in Tucson. Daniel, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. My wife asked me to call about tipping. Her friends are telling her that servers are getting full salary nowadays, so why should we be tipping?
Nate, you want to go for it?
They're actually not. So what their minimum wage, what their pay does is if they don't hit a certain dollar amount based off of their tips that they've received, they are guaranteed that amount to uh, they they're brought up to the minimum wage amount to cover it, I guess you can say.
Correct. There's a tip credit in Arizona so that the servers make $3 less as a base wage than the full Monty minimum wage. If they do not achieve that $14.35 an hour, it would be up to the responsibility of the proprietor to make that up, Daniel. And that has pretty much never happened in my lifetime of doing payroll. For all of our employees in Arizona, this is my 30-some-month year in the restaurant business at this point. And it happens on the first week before they start taking tips. But again, once they get to tips, it's a substantial increase in that. And so I wouldn't say that you don't want to be tipping. We're by no means stating what the servers make as for a reason for you not to tip or care for your server in any way, shape, or form. I love our servers. I love going out to all the local restaurants. And of course, as restaurant owners, we like to think that we tip pretty well over here, Nate. But ultimately, they are certainly making a substantially higher base wage than they were in previous years. And when you hear of the federal minimum wage being $2.13 an hour and the federal minimum wage for full Monty minimum wage being $7.25 an hour, these don't apply to the state of Arizona in any capacity. And so you may look nationally and say a hamburger is a hamburger is a hamburger and here are the prices, but there are some states where the server wage is 80% less than what it is in Arizona, and Arizona isn't even the highest in the country. You go to California or to Washington and there are some very, very expensive meals. And so one of the things that's coming up down the pipeline for this is service charges and whether restaurants can actually put a 2 or 3 or 4 or 5% service charge on the bottom of your bill. If any of you have ever dined in San Francisco, you can see these charges, surcharges being added to the bottom. It's not common here in Tucson, but it is something that we're keeping an eye on and the industry moving forward. And I know the FTC is looking into the legalities of those surcharges as well. And that's going to be coming down the pipeline here soon. But to start to put a bow on our show over here, I'm going to turn this back over to Nate and ask you if there's, you know, anything you got coming down the pipeline. Like, what's the future of Aries Collective Prep and Pastry? You've got stores in Tucson, Arizona. You've got stores in Gilbert. You got stores in Scottsdale. Where are you going next? What are you going to do with Prep?
You know, we're really taking this year to kind of focus on ourselves and our business and hospitality, really kind of, you know, coming out of the craziness of these past 3 to 4 years. We just really want to get back to what we used to do. So really nothing too much. You know, we got the Broadway complex we're doing with this, with Rio Nuevo in the city of Tucson. But, you know, that's not until very late in this year. So really just kind of focusing on this season and making sure the team members are super excited, making sure that, you know, we're taking care of our team members. And yeah, that's really it.
Well, I salute you on all of your successes thus far. It's amazing to have you here on Jump in Tucson to be one of our inaugural guests in a business success story, right? Somebody that's doing it right, as opposed to the macabre of who's failing or who's just the latest, greatest opening. It's somebody that's actually out there in the grind, working every single day, getting his hands dirty in bake shops and flour and has absolutely started at the bottom as a dishwasher. And I've got nothing but respect for that. I love these sort of stories about the industry. It's one of the things that make it so great. It's an American success story where you can literally start from the bottom and work your way up to be a regional player like you've done. Nate, again, tons of congratulations. I can't, you know, congratulate you enough on all of your success.
I appreciate that. It's been a fun run and, you know, just super excited to be here and continue doing what we do.
Love it. You guys get out there and please support your local restaurants. Hopefully we have laid it down on just how important the hospitality business is for Southern Arizona, for Arizona as a state. I hope that you guys get out there and support these locally owned places. Do tip well out there, Daniel. We love you. Thanks for thinking of our team and thanks for calling in. We've got amazing shows coming up for you in Jump in Tucson. Tom Moulton on Thursday. I've got Dr. Ed Ackerley on Friday. You're listening to Jump in Tucson on 10:30 a.m. The Voice, your choice for local talk and news in Tucson.